How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
Whether your business has six floors or six employees, Walmart Business has everything you need to save time, money, and hassle. You can restock your break room with bulk ordering or bulk up your ordering team with shared payments. And you can get it all delivered straight to your business's door, whether that's on Wall Street or Main Street. Walmart Business. It's the Walmart you love, now for your business. Learn more at business.walmart.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and I'm recording this from my Airbnb in Florence, Italy. Just came off of an insanely amazing wedding in Tuscany here in Florence for a few days, and I'm bopping around to a couple more cities. Anyway, not to bore you with details about my personal travels, but today on the podcast, we have Julia Alexander. Julia is a media correspondent for Puck News, and I've heard her on various Puck podcasts. Puck provides some really high-level, really informed analysis of the TV and media and Hollywood landscape. And Julia recently appeared on an episode of The Grill Room, which I don't listen to all the time, but I saw an episode pop up somewhere that was titled The Bravo-vacation of Everything. And obviously I had to listen to it. And she just had some really incredible insights into how a lot of different kind of realms, both political, entertainment-wise, are kind of taking a page from the Bravo playbook. She was clearly a Bravo fan too. In listening to this episode, I was like, okay, Julia knows her stuff. So I reached out to her, and turns out that she's actually a fan of Gabbing with Gib, which was extremely flattering because Julia is such a smart person and she knows so much more about the TV landscape than I do. And so for her to agree to come on and to have this conversation that we had today was really flattering and exciting. We got into some of the topics that she talked about on that episode of The Grill Room, but also expanded upon them in the Bravo realm, because in that conversation, they took them sort of in the opposite direction. So we talked a lot about some of her theories. She has this theory that Andy Cohen is the master of the universe, which I think you'll appreciate. And then the different kind of forces that are at play when it comes to, you know, how Bravo is adapting to the evolving media landscape, how Bravo stars are cultivating even more intense devotion to themselves as the years go on, the sort of creator Bravo celebrity reality TV star economy, maybe how Peacock is evolving, and how Bravo is so important, how it's become such an important asset for NBC to continue to grow Peacock. A bunch of different really kind of bigger ideas that I think you'll really appreciate. So keep listening for my chat with Julia Alexander. Check out her writing at Puck News, and please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll see you later this week.
I want to gab.
All right, today we're gabbing with Julia Alexander, who is a media correspondent for Puck News, also has a Substack called Posting Nexus. I recently listened to Julia talking about the Bravo-fication of everything on an episode of The Grill Room, and I just love some of the ideas that she brought up. I've heard her on a bunch of podcasts, and now I know she's a Bravo fan, so now she's in the Gabbing with Gib family, and I just wanted to have her onto the show to go even further in sort of the direction of Bravo in terms of the stuff that they talked about on this episode. So Julia, thanks for being here. How are you?
Oh my God, thank you so much for having me. I am lovely. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be talking to you. And so I have to say at first, like, I love so much of what Puck does, like subscribe to multiple newsletters, religious listener of the town, all the things. But I do feel like one thing that, like, as a consumer of that stuff, that is like, not, I don't know if frustrated is the right word, but I do feel like Bravo does kind of get dismissed as part of those conversations sometimes. And I don't know if that's like because of who is having those conversations usually or what, but I'm curious if as an expert in that field, do you feel that? Do you ever feel like Bravo is this like juggernaut still of like a cable entity gets dismissed as part of those conversations? Because I do feel like it stands out in the crowd.
Yeah, I think Bravo runs into the same issue that YouTube ran into and almost still does, which is this idea that because it is not scripted $8 to $9 million episode content from auteur creators, people don't necessarily take it seriously, or it's dismissed as something that is passive entertainment for a lot of women of a certain age. And so the idea that this is not worth as much critical consideration as NFL coverage, for example, or even like a Dick Wolf show on CBS or NBC, because there's a level of, I don't want to say male energy, but a lot of energy that kind of goes into this idea of what is serious and what is not. It's really frustrating today because you look at the success of Bravo, and even when you look at Comcast, which owns NBC Universal, which owns Bravo as a whole, like they're going through this very big split right. of their cable networks, and everything that is going into the SpinCo company called Versant, which is basically a wind down company. We're basically acknowledging this is not a growth opportunity, is everything but Bravo. Mm-hmm. Bravo is in the growth section. It's with Peacock and NBC Sports. And so the idea that we can look at the financial success of Bravo, its cultural success, but still acknowledge that, or people will still try to recognize this as not important, is really jarring. And it's the exact same thing that I saw happen when I first started reporting on YouTube 10, 11 years ago, which was like, well, this is user-generated content. No one really cares. It's for kids. They're watching on their phone. And all of a sudden, you know, YouTube maintains the largest share of all viewership in the United States on TV sets. People like Mr. Beast are full-blown media companies and who are selling their content, you know, for $100 million to Amazon. And so all of a sudden, people are like, oh, YouTube is more than what it is, but you still get these comments from people like Ted Sarandos, who's the co-CEO of Netflix, saying, well, YouTube is where you go to waste time, like you spend time with Netflix. And I think this is the same approach that gets applied to Bravo, which is, well, Bravo doesn't really matter. It's just like Housewives content. And it's like, well, no, Andy Cohen has built up an empire of truly loyal, high margin audiences that doesn't get the credit it deserves.
Right. It's like, what other cable brand has even that sort of association and deep devotion, and to the point where there can be a convention of fans that will pay thousands of dollars to attend and to meet these people. So I totally agree with you. And in the episode of The Grill Room, you sort of started out with this great opening line where you were like, I have this theory that Andy Cohen is the master of the universe who understands us better than anyone else. I need you to explain that for my listeners, just what you mean by that, because it's a great statement.
Thank you. Yeah, I am a huge Andy Cohen fan, just in general. I just think he's like a funny person, also clearly very good at what he does. So this goes back to, I've been working on this theory for a long time, kind of around the last election cycle heading into our current president and the administration, which is the Bravofication of everything. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind that is, if you wanted to distill Bravo down to kind of almost as a joke, not in a very serious way, you would kind of say that you're putting people who like attention, who know how to manufacture attention, in a room together in the most entertaining and relatable way.
Yeah.
And so that's a very difficult thing. I mean, I know, you know, so you are literally the expert on it, but it's a very difficult thing to do, right? To get people to say, I want to watch you in multiple different formats. I want to watch you on TV. I want to watch you on Instagram. I will pay for a cameo, like whatever it is. Who also like you or detest you based on the way you present yourself within these types of shows, really lends itself to our current political climate. And so when I think about what Andy Cohen managed to do, and not just Andy Cohen, because this also goes back to, you know, E! And Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Right.
When you think about that moment of reality TV and Andy Cohen's ability to kind of take a format and apply it to different locations, different groups of people, but really build this into something that an entire global community is willing to engage with over and over and over again to a deep level of obsession. I mean, that kind of spells what is happening in our political world today, where you have someone like Donald Trump who vastly understands, like the best thing you could say about Donald Trump is he's a great casting director. Like he understands what type of people resonate with certain audiences, right, both in a positive way and a negative way. And then he plays into it in media, whether it's social media, whether it's traditional media. And then he controls this almost cult-like fandom around this idea of his lessons from reality TV. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you have a positive story of that, it's like Bravo and E. Like that's the positive entertainment. This is fun. We enjoy it. We may have our opinions on certain people like Jesse Solomon, but like we're not necessarily like this guy's, you know, running the free world. When you apply those same very human characteristics to political situations that we have now, you get this very scary current kind of authoritarian moment. But the the strategies around how to use media and appear in media are like similar. One-to-one the same.
Right, right. And it also applies to like every influencer too and every podcaster who wants, you know, as many dollars from one listener. And if you, that means like you listen to it for the ad money, then you might do the Patreon, then you might do the, and I think what you said about like, you either like them or detest them. One, that changes between seasons for a lot of people. Like we're supposed to go on this up and down roller coaster with like all these people, and that's how it's like designed. But even if you detest somebody, you still might pay $6 for a cameo. You still might, you know what I mean? Like it's, and I think part of that is like the Dylan Byers, who hosts the show, he was talking about how like Bravo was able to create stakes out of nothing essentially and create this investment out of nothing. Because like, before this, we didn't know who any of these people were. They're quote unquote regular people. But I also think that an important part of this part of the conversation is like the time spent with everybody and like just like the sunken time that I have spent watching any given person on any of these shows is like that makes me not want to give up on them. That makes me want to stick it out with them for the full ride. And again, maybe spend some more money in a different way and support them. I don't know. I think that the time spent is a big part of it, too.
Absolutely. And the thing is, if you look at how much reality TV stars have impacted the idea of culture today, I mean, it's pervasive in everything. To your point about influencers, there was this great moment in 2017, 2018, post-Vine. A lot of the Vine stars had moved over to YouTube because mm-hmm. they could monetize their content better. And these are kids who would have grown up on Bravo and E! And also like, you know, game show, more competitive reality shows totally. Like Survivor and all those, but the Real World as well. And when you look at what YouTube was celebrating in 2017, literally in its video for advertisers, there's this moment where Jake and Logan Paul are kind of like, you know, going to fight each other. This was the moment of manufactured drama and diss tracks. And you would tune in every single day because there was a video every single day. And they would be talking about this kind of drama that existed within this very small town of Hollywood. And this idea that there were these influencers who were hanging out and they were beefing and you loved some and you detested some. And that is a pure Andy Cohen playbook. Like that is just taken exactly what has worked well on cable television and moved the medium into a younger audience, which is what YouTube now is. And so I think that then comes full circle where you have people like, you know, Teresa Giudice, who's I always call her that. That's what I prefer. And the way that they use and weaponize or strategically place themselves on Instagram and TikTok, whatever it might be, they fully understand that in order to kind of maintain this power that they have, this relationship with viewers, it's no longer just enough to kind of be on the show. You have to have this authenticity off the show. And I think that really came through with Vanderpump.
Okay.
I think towards the end of Vanderpump, they were aware of the comments they were getting. And it changed how they were on the show. It changed what they wanted to talk about. But their Instagram then became much more important because it was like, here's how we communicate. And so I think when you look at the Bravofication of everything, again, that plays through at this global political level where the way that Trump appears on a video for when he's doing an interview with ABC is different than his tweets that he's sending out. It's different than how he's approaching digital influencers. And he understands that maintaining that audience loyalty, it means kind of being there at every single moment of their time, really building into that attention and the time spent that they're giving you, but also understanding like where you thrive on which platforms and why.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that you can really see stem out of the kind of Bravo growth over the last decade.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost, and it's like, for example, like recently I felt like there was this like influx of Bravo stars having podcasts, and like that has been a thing for a while. Like the Vanderpump people actually were like pretty early in that regard. Honestly, like Stassi and Sheena have had podcasts for a long time, but like I think there's this like almost feeling like, oh, I should have a podcast. And it's like, actually, I don't think everybody should thrive. I don't think everybody does thrive in that medium. I don't think everybody should have that. I think that they can all find their own little pocket to, you know, have a deeper connection with their fans, but I don't think like the podcast medium is for everybody, you know. And I don't think that's something that's a good example of that. And I also, in terms of like, you know, the investment in the people, like there's a reason why Bravo continues to loop back to the OG talent. There's a reason why they keep dipping back into the quasi OG pool of like having people return, or now with Love Hotel and Wife Swap and like these opportunities to like bring them back into the fold, because those are one, I think it triggers nostalgia for like longtime viewers like us, and two, I just think it also hits home like it is hard for them to break new people. It's hard for them to break new shows and create that investment. Like it takes 2 to 3 to 4 seasons for that to happen, you know?
Yeah, and I think the success within once they find those characters, to your point, I mean, these are people, but they are playing characters to an extent. They're exaggerated versions. Are. You know, you think about the Giggly Squad. You think about looking at what works with Paige, right? And that kind of cross and what they've managed to successfully do between Summer House, Winter House, and Southern Charm, right? Like the idea of having Craig Conover and Austin and Sierra. And now, when you have multiple seasons of the drama, the manufactured drama that makes you want to pick a side, that makes you feel loyal, that makes you seek out these people outside of the 1 hour that you give them on a Wednesday or Thursday, where you really feel like that parasocial relationship exists, where it's like, I really love this person. I will pay to go to their tour. I'll pay for their book. I'll watch their podcast. You actually get to this beautiful moment that exists within Bravo right now, which is almost like the banality of boredom, which is the best moments on Summer House for me at this point are like when they are in bed. And they're just talking. And they're just like, I just want to like talk about, you know, what is happening in my life and what I've got going on this week. And that only exists. You can only get to that level of satisfaction with a show when nothing is happening. And of course, there's obviously still drama. But when you've built in the time that these people that become part of your life in your own way, where you are in your bed and you're watching Paige and Amanda in their bed and Sierra. And now you're like, this is fantastic. And I don't think Bravo gets enough credit for how efficient and how, again, like the banality of it that really works for audiences. Because otherwise, when you look at what traditional entertainment has to do, it's a lot of figuring out how you reach the different peaks and climaxes of entertainment. You know, where is the big exciting moment in sports? What is it? And these cost billions of dollars to figure out. Bravo does it very cheaply, and they've totally landed on a format that they can replicate over and over and over again. So it's scalable, not use a tech term, but it's like immensely scalable. And so to your point, you find new characters that sometimes work. So West, right, comes in. It's like people like him. They're interested. It's good. You find ones that don't work, like Alexi or whatever. And it's like, okay, I don't necessarily need this. Or like that one season of Vanderpump where it was terrible. And you go back to like what has worked, but you're able to experiment with it because you have a foundation in the loyalty of audience. And I think that is a remarkable thing to have in 2025. 100%.
And they have this like signature style too. Like I think Andy calls like the Bravo wink too. And like Brian Moylan, who's like a big scholar in this area, I would say like he always brings up this idea that like they keep in the drink orders and the food orders, and they show them talking to the hostess before they go to a restaurant, because it, even though it seems kind of silly, or like in not important, it still adds like this level of like realism and sort of relatability to the scene, you know? And like, whereas like a Netflix show would never do that. Like they cut all that shit out. They cut right to the point, but like that gives it this like sheen of like that Bravo has, but not as much, I would say. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. And I actually think that what you're saying is so important, because the authenticity that exists for Bravo today is a really, it's almost a mirror. It's a beautiful reflection of our own current kind of socio-cultural environment, where we are posters. Like for anyone can be a creator in their bedroom. There was a great comment from Adam Mosseri, who's the CEO of Instagram, who said at the end of a podcast that the biggest issue they're facing is that there's more content than demand for content, which just means more people are uploading reels and more people are saying, I want to be involved. So the relatability factor of people on a Bravo show. So it's just slightly elevated than maybe a YouTuber, slightly elevated than someone in their room doing reels. But that aspirational, almost attainable factor is something that very few networks really lean into. So even when you look at The Real Housewives, which started with, you know, the idea, the big houses, and we still get that, right? Especially when you look at Beverly Hills, behind the gates. And now it's kind of like, yeah, that's happening, but they're also, they go to bars that you can go to. They go to restaurants that you can go to. It's not just we're hanging out in our beautiful, luxurious mansions all the time. You know, the most relatable thing of Real Housewives.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there.
Weight loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Are the kids, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I have all these problems with, I'm thinking about which school for my kid to go to, all these things that you watching, whether you're 15 and you relate to like
the kid,
Carol's kids, right? Like Caroline's kids, or you're like 40 and you're like, I'm relating to this moment here at a time when everyone at any age is uploading their own content and kind of doing so in a Bravo way. They're doing the wink. They're doing these little things that they have learned works well on TV and on digital platform. I think that foundational shift in how we approach what feels authentic for something on television really stems back to like the earliest days of Bravo that they have just continuously leaned into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed sponsored jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidate see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Another thing that you brought up in the episode that I keep referring to is sort of the way that like the attention economy has almost like further radicalized fans too. And like, made the devotion to them even more intense. And like, I've definitely obviously noticed that with Bravo fans. That's like a very common thing in that world. But you argue that's sort of because of these maybe extra platforms and extra avenues to stay connected to these people and to sort of cultivate that devotion.
Yeah. And so I know that I keep bringing it back to politics, and I do not mean to, because God knows we don't need another political podcast. But the reason that I keep thinking about the Bravofication of everything is exactly what you're saying, which is this idea that Bravo stars, before almost anyone, and I'm going to include the Kardashians, even though they're E, but they're basically Bravo light. I mean, it's the same format. And so the Kardashians understood that there was a lot of power in the off-platform, so for this off-the-TV avenues. And there was a great moment with Keeping Up the Kardashians, and I'm sure you remember, where they had to hold back a lot of the stuff that happened in Paris when Kim was robbed. Part of it was like she was traumatized, obviously. And another part of it, though, was these producers, I remember reading about this, had this moment where they're like, there's content that is not on social because they took a 2-month break from social media. And so actually Keeping Up with the Kardashians felt new again. It felt relevant because people weren't just getting content 3-4 months earlier on Instagram. And so there was this beautiful reconciliation of like, there's so much power we have on Instagram and TikTok. TikTok was just becoming a thing. And there is a power to what we can do at television. And the reality networks really started to understand, okay, well, how can we use all these different platforms to really deeply engage these audiences? There's a line that everyone in tech uses, which is unintended consequences. And so the unintended consequence of making yourself available in all these different ways, you are no longer just the version of something that is presented by all these editors, by all these directors who are putting out the show. Now you're putting out unfiltered versions of yourself. And so you're leaning into new topics of interest, new areas of relatability. Mm. Is that people do develop these parasocial, which is a one-way relationship where you do feel like you know them. And because they live in an apartment in New York City or whatever it might be, you're like, oh, actually, we could run into each other at the bar and we would be friends. And so you get this deeply obsessive, and obsession is always bad, right? Like at some point, obsession becomes terrible.
Sure.
This obsession with the way that you think this person should be. And when they don't live up to that expectation, yeah. it deeply diminishes your loyalty to them or your loyalty to the show. And again, the reason I said I don't want to bring this up in politics, but like that is something that you see at this current administration. Like you see it where it's like they are relatable because of the way that they appear outside of typical areas of appearance of presidents. So, you know, radio, television. That is not what won Donald Trump the election, right? It is like the way that he exists on social. It is the way that he connects with people outside of it. They feel like in a deeply obsessive way, his fans, and he has fans, they're not voters, they're fans, who really see him as someone that they could have a beer with, even more so than George W. Bush back in the early 2000s. It was like, oh, this guy is me, even though he's nowhere close to his average voter in terms of just a stature of point of life. And I think Bravo and the East Side really ran into the same problem, which is like there's a version that we have put out of people and that's fine. Like I didn't think I would ever hang out with like Melissa and Therese. Like that's just not a thing I would ever do. But as it gets into Summer House, as it gets into Vanderpump and you have a younger mm-hmm. creator base
who's
more than happy to go out and be on social, you do develop these really obsessive relationships. And it can get toxic very quickly.
Definitely. And I think that the social media component that you brought up is really interesting, and it sort of unlocked something for me that I hadn't totally. There's Bravo in production clearly asks the cast members to not post updates as they pertain to what's going on in filming while they're filming, right? And so I think that has created this like almost obsession with finding the little clues that maybe that will leak out, or you see something in the background of Lisa Barlow's Instagram story on the trip to wherever they are right now, you know, like those kind of things. And it creates this like whole other sort of ecosystem of like, you know, piecing things together and like trying to like figure out what's going to happen on the show months before it's ever going to air. And that's all because of social media and the dedication that we have to these people and how closely we're following them, which is a little scary in some ways, right? It's like we're literally piecing together what we're seeing. And then the Kardashian element, I think that's a very fascinating time in the sort of end of the Keeping Up run, which is like they had the robbery, the Khloe Tristan scandal. They had these couple really big tentpole scandals, essentially, that kept that show alive for a little bit. And then they didn't have that show for a while. And then it's back and on Hulu, and it's not nearly as like engrossing, and it's kind of boring. I still watch it because I will watch kind of like anything they do just as like out of fascination, right? But it's not at the same level of sort of like behind the velvet curtain with them, I don't think, in the same way that the end of Keeping Up was. But they're not all Kim, they're not all Kylie, and on the Housewives, on the Bravo side, it's like they're not all Bethany Frankel. So like I think that some people think that at a certain point, they can step away from the show. They don't need the show. But I argue that like the show is still so important to just sort of like centering the relevancy, the conversation around these people. What do you think about that? Because there is a point where these individual personalities and stars probably think, oh, I've created this really amazing little ecosystem around me that I don't need the show anymore. But like, you still need the show.
I'm so happy you brought this up because this is like what I think about a lot. I used to work at Disney for a year, and there's just things like these are things I would think about within Disney as I just think about like there's the internet world where you can be more creatory, and then there's like the centralized world, which is still very important. And it's how most people still engage mm-hmm. with entertainment. And so I had this chart I would use a lot, which is my rule is that everything is defined by power laws. Our laws are very simple. It is like the top 1% create like what the 99% of people watch.
Right.
So, you know, like that. So it's the Kim Kardashian thing. Kim and Kylie are what most people want to watch. But then there is all this other content. And so most people exist to the right of this line where it's like you're probably not big enough on your own. You're tied to the title that is bigger. A great example of this is sports leagues. So you do not have that many LeBron Jameses.
Right.
So the vast majority of them really need the NBA. LeBron does not need the NBA at this point. And I think to your point, what's really fascinating about what the Bravo talent have started to understand is one, that they get a lot of the opportunities they do because they're on a Bravo show, because mm-hmm. they're within the system that has agents and publicists and they can kind of go and do this. But two is because Bravo has gotten so, and we were just talking about this before we started recording, because Bravo has gotten so big and the crossovers are there and you've got all these different talent across the board. I find myself listening to a lot of podcasts and watching and following a lot of Instagram accounts just to keep up with things that I know I'm not going to watch. And I think if you're a really smart media person within the Bravo universe, you understand how important it is to kind of keep your name up in these other areas where people are like, oh, I am interested in Roni and New Roni or Beverly Hills, but I'm not watching right now because I just don't have the time. But I will listen to podcasts about it or I will listen to news about it. And so you realize you have to be in the news at some capacity because people are still talking about it. And that makes the show more valuable. It makes your appearance on the show more valuable. And it's kind of this beautiful flywheel. And so I do think that a lot of the people within this are hyper aware that they're not going to be a Hannah and go off and have a page and be able to do this tour that they're doing. Most of them might be like a, you know, there's kind of mid-level. Like they might be a Danielle. And then they're like, okay, well, I'm not going to go and do this. I'm not going to be a Lindsay Hubbard. I might be a Carl down the road, right? Where it's like no one really cares. And clearly I'm like Summer House obsessed right now. But like and so I think the more that we get younger people into the Bravo shows and the more that Bravo stars in general really understand the importance of the flywheel effect outside of Bravo, they understand that that might push them closer to the left side of that power law where they can go and do their own thing. But right now, the reason that they can do the book tour, the reason that they can have a line is because of the Bravo show.
Right.
And so they still need to be on Watch What Happens Live and they still need to be within this universe. And I think that is a testament to Bravo's ability to remain the center of the universe and not just have creators, which again, makes it very much what YouTube is. Like that's exactly what YouTube exists as. And I think Bravo is just a precursor to this insane moment that YouTube is having.
It makes me start to think about like, okay, like which Bravo stars don't need the show. I think that list is like extremely small. And I also think that like, there's this weird thing where like, I agree. I think Paige could step away from Summer House right now and be great probably for a really long time. Definitely for like 5 years, like where she just like continues the Giggly Squad of it all, does all her fashion stuff. But I also think that like a lot of people have been in that fairly similar position. I think Paige is like kind of like one of one, honestly. But like if you're somebody like maybe like an Ariana Maddox who has had this amazing moment where she capitalized on a heartbreak and she's turned it into all this amazing opportunity. And that is a very much a testament to like the work that she was willing to put into it, like, you know, turning lemons into lemonade, all those things. But like in 2 to 3 years when maybe she isn't the Love Island host anymore. And maybe, you know, there aren't so many like other reality show opportunities coming up. Like that's the point when it's like, oh, like maybe I have to go back to the well. Maybe I have to, and Vanderpump Rules is tough because we don't know what that looks like for those people because it doesn't exist anymore for them. But like, you know what I mean? Like at a certain point, the housewife has to come back to the flagship franchise.
Totally. I mean, look at, I think a great example of what you're talking about is Schwartzy. Yeah. Like Schwartzy has to go around from Bravo show to Bravo show to remind people he's like around. He's like, I'm doing the Valley. I'm right. on Summer House. Like I'm going to do winter. Like it's Schwartzy is kind of like Kramer in this universe where he just barges in and he's like, remember me? Like
I'm kind of, it's a great comparison.
Right. And you're like, oh yeah. And I love Schwartz. Like, but the thing about it is he very much understands that he can't go out and start a sandwich company with Sandoval and have that be his thing. He understands that he's not going to launch a big bar without Lisa Vanderpump and have that success. And he knows that his success forever is tied into what this is. And so to your point about all the stars coming back and finding new opportunities or doing things like the Traitors, right? Where it's like, oh, I can go and do this other thing and maybe move into the competitive part of my reality show career. I think that understanding of I'm getting attention and I have a following and people are really invested in me, but that investment is not as large as the loyalty to the network, and therefore I must remain within the network, actually is the main difference between Bravo and kind of the rest of the creator universe happening outside of it, all the influencers that are happening on their own. Because you can have an influencer who's on TikTok or Instagram, but they're not necessarily tied to those platforms. Mm-hmm. They can kind of go around. If you are a Bravo reality star, the fact that we say you're a Bravo reality star goes a long way. And again, I think that is something that Andy Cohen very much understands. He understands the influence his network has. He understands the power his casting team has. And so, again, when you think about the Bravofication of everything, that is very much being in the Republican Party and being like, we need to be around this guy. Because when this guy goes, we no longer matter to the people who are really just interested in him. And so I think if you understand the dynamics of what makes Bravo a successful network and what makes loyalty audience to Bravo so unique and so amazing and scary all at once, you also get a deep understanding of like what is happening currently in our political climate. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a wild thing to kind of watch play out. You're like, oh, the president would have been great on a Bravo show.
Right,
like
right.
he gets it. Instead, you know, he's whatever. But But yeah, and so I think you're spot on. I think there is this understanding still that I need to be on Bravo in some capacity.
And also you mentioned like when that person goes away, but also like when you spurn that person, they you're no longer part of that family or that circle. Like Trump does that all the time with people. He puts people out of his circle constantly. And like, I don't think Andy Cohen does that constantly, but like if you're somebody like a NeNe Leakes, who is like a premier star on the network, one of the most influential people to ever be on Bravo, but then you sue him, it's like, I don't think there's ever a coming back from that. I think there's false hope from fans that could happen. But like, I think once you're out in a bit. It's harder to be fully out, I think, when you're in the Bravo world. But like, there are a couple people who like will never come back, I don't think, to Bravo, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree completely.
So, you know, you talked about how like there's a lot to keep up with and it's kind of impossible. One of the, I think, the questions, I think sort of the existential questions for Bravo is like, is there a limit to what people will consume or put onto their media consumption diet, like at any given time? Because, you know, like right now it's like a fairly light Housewives time. We just have Atlanta on, we have a lot of the younger shows on, but sometimes there's four Housewives on, which have after shows, which then you have Watch What Happens Live, then you have all the podcasts, and then you have like another Below Deck on or something. Sometimes it can be a lot for anybody. Do you think there is a limit, and do you think that matters at all to sort of the continuation of Bravo in the future?
I think that's such a good question. I really think that is the big question. The thing I come back to, I had this conversation with a friend of mine who is like, just picture like the straightest bro in the world. And like, that is him. And so the idea of him ever talking about a Real Housewives is never going to happen. But he also loves snowboarding and skiing.
Okay.
No,
and
so he's no. I mean, he would. I told him this.
That's the straight guy show, by the way.
Yeah, I'm like, you would love. No, so he loves skiing and snowboarding. He's in Utah, like 6 months out of the year. So he started watching Salt Lake City.
Amazing.
And he's obsessed. And he's like, I'm not going to watch any of the other shows. I have no interest in Bravo, but they go to restaurants I go to. Like, they're going to ski shops I go to, and I'm really invested now in them. And I do think Bravo, because they're not necessarily increasing the cost of their programming, it's not like they're suddenly spending billions of dollars on doing 10,000 shows. I think because they have the regionality and they can just lean into like, oh, there's an audience here who might be interested in this one show and it's not costing us much more. Maybe we'll get a star to like a Jen Shaw out of it, and then we can put them into another show and it expands the Bravo universe, or we can have them come somewhere else. I think it's kind of like the comic book structure of the 70s. Where you're like, oh, we're going to introduce a new superhero. We're going to see how it goes. And we can end the print. We don't have to continue this happening. But if it takes off, if we create, you know, the next Spider-Man, then we can actually increase the revenue and the popularity and loyalty of our shows across the board by finding ways to bring them in and increase the level of Bravo. And so if you follow that analogy through, you know, like in 1994, Marvel Comics goes bankrupt because they just got too greedy and they were doing things that the fandom really wasn't interested in. And so I think as long as Bravo doesn't try to do programming for the sake of programming,
right?
So it's not just like, oh, we're going to do 10 new Housewives shows. 80% of these Housewives are boring. Nothing about it is interesting. All of a sudden, I now look at Bravo is like a dread. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to keep up with this. I don't care about it. And now all of a sudden my attention is going elsewhere. E has a comeback or something. And it's like, we're going to go watch this new thing over here. As long as Bravo stays in its lane to an extent and really figures out how to introduce character via new show rather than just introduce new settings for experiment, I think Bravo will be okay. I do also think, I had this really interesting conversation a few years ago with somebody time's a flat circle, like last year at CBS. And I was asking them if they were hurt by the writer strike.
Okay.
And I said, you know, like, what are you guys doing? Are you bringing in stuff from like Canada and the UK? And they went, no, we're going to add 30 more minutes to Survivor.
Right.
Like, and people are going to be super into it. And they weren't. And they were like, we're fine. We could just do Survivor and we would be fine. But, you know, we're committed to all these other things. And I think Bravo has that figured out with Peacock as well, where they're like, we're just going to add an extra after show or like another minute, and people are going to be into it, and we know it works. And so that is going to give us safety net to then go do experiments elsewhere. So I actually think they're incredibly well positioned to keep expanding. And that's clear in the way that Comcast and NBC Universal talks about Bravo,
totally. Which
is very much like, yep, this is our thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about like the testing out of an addition, because it's like they tried Dubai for 2 years. It didn't really hit. And like it also didn't hurt them by canceling it. Like there wasn't, not much was lost. Like, you know what I mean? Like there was, so the brand didn't take a hit. The other thing that I think is a potential existential question for them is like, we talked about the time spent with these shows, and the sort of flip side of that is, can I jump into season 19 of Real Housewives of Orange County? 100%. And like anecdotally, there are so many people who like, they hear what I do for work and they're like, oh my God, like I would totally watch Bravo, but like, I don't have time to watch 15 seasons of a show to get caught up. And that's sort of, I think from the outside of people who aren't in this Bravo world, there's a good amount of people. The idea is that there's just too much of it to like to be able to understand. So like, it's just not for me. Yeah. And I think once I get somebody to actually, you know, jump in and like start from Salt Lake, because there's only 5 seasons or whatever, they realize actually, no, you can just, it's worth doing the jump. But is that also a worry, do you think they have? And like, how do you think they can combat that?
Oh, sure. I mean, at some point you're kind of like, wow, we wish we had an Ariana Tom moment, because people all of a sudden are saying like, I mean, I watched every person in my life who was not watching Vanderpump, and I was upset that there were people who were not watching Vanderpump.
Of course.
And I was like, where
offensive.
Have you been the last?
Right.
Like, you don't even know about Stassi.
Oh my God.
And so I watched them binge. What was it, 9
yeah,
to 10 seasons
lot.
At that
yeah.
point? Like, it was 9 or 10 seasons, and they got caught up for like the reunion. Like, they were like, that was like their end goal. Yeah, they were like, we got to get to the reunion. And it was like a weird moment where I was like, that's a lot of that's like sitting down saying, I'm going to binge like Law and Order SVU.
Right.
And just for 26 seasons to catch up to like the next one. But I think what they'll end up having is silos. So you'll have people come into Bravo and they'll have their own Bravo. And their Bravo might not have anything to ever do with the Housewives.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of people,
yeah.
and you're the expert on this, so you tell me. I think there's a lot of people who are just Summer House people.
Yep.
They're just Vanderpump people. And they're like, and that's fine. And I'm happy with that. And I'm willing to follow these people, and I will watch, and I will pay for Peacock to have access to it. And like, that's great. And then I think to your point, there are people who come in and are like, oh, I started with Salt Lake, or I started with Beverly Hills, and now I'm, you know, going to watch Roni. And I'm being told I don't need to watch the new Roni.
Right.
So I don't have to do that. And I think you'll also have this, I mean, Bravo's community is crazy in the best way. Like, you have all these people who are like, no, don't
no,
do that.
Skip
like,
the
I'm
first
gonna
season
give you...
of Summer House. You can start with season 3. Right, exactly.
Yeah, like, start, and you don't have to worry about it. And, like, here's what you're missing. Like, they dated, and now they don't.
Right.
And I think because the stakes are so much lower than when you think about a Bravo show compared to, like, a Severance, right? We're like, okay, well, here's what you have to understand. There's, like, this weird world. This is, like, these guys, and they work in Manhattan, and they come to the... They party, and then they're fighting. And then you can kind of just jump in. And the flashbacks work very well for Bravo for this reason. And I do think the more that silos happen and people choose what their version of Bravo becomes, I think it actually becomes more powerful for Bravo, because now you have all these different entrance points into the network, but the network does not have to be everything for everyone. The network just has to really lean into its diehard fans across those different franchises. So if they treat the franchises as their own standalone empires, mm-hmm. and each little part of that show is, you know, an island within that empire, then the big world that Bravo exists in is basically just made up of a bunch of different countries. And so you don't
right.
have to worry about every country being great. You just have to make sure that every country is self-governable. Every country is doing well on its own, that citizens of those countries are happy. And I think
that.
That's kind of where they're at now. And it will be even more important post-cable, because the way that we discover content on streaming is just totally different. Like, you get served recommendations. You don't really browse in the same way. You're not like, oh, my show is on. It's like, oh, there's a new episode of something, or this is saying that I might like it. And so I think the more that those franchises really lean into someone's certain habits, maybe I'm 45 and I like Real Housewives, or I'm 21, I like Summer House, and I'm not interested in that kind of overlap, the more important that the success of those franchises will be to Bravo and NBC Universal.
I'm glad you mentioned the after show earlier, because I also feel like that is sort of an extra piece of content that, like, I think Bravo was searching for that sort of extra thing to keep you on Peacock that, like, they hadn't really figured out yet. Like, they have this sort of like paid subscriber thing on the website, which, like, I don't know how many people actually do that, and like, there's nothing really like a super essential there, but like, the after show has become this thing that's under their umbrella. It's not on somebody, it's not on Portia Williams' YouTube channel. It's not on somebody's podcast. It's like on the Peacock app. And like, you have to watch that for some show. Like The Valley, it's like a whole extra episode of that show is the after show. And so I think that that is a really good call out. And you talking about sort of the different, how the flashbacks are so helpful and stuff. I'm like, maybe Peacock could just like create 30-minute recaps of like each season of every single Bravo show and just like have that be a tool that people can utilize if they like, you know what I mean? Like that would be so,
totally.
I guess like the risk is that more people won't watch the full back catalog, but like, I think that'd be really helpful to a lot of people, honestly, even myself who wants to get like reminded of certain things. So there's so much information, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah. And especially like with, like considering like the streaming audience tends to be younger. You look at what NBC Universal did their upfronts this week and like not related to Bravo, but they have the NBA back and now they're doing like bingo digital cards to get people to spend more time. And I'm like, yeah, you could do something that's very streaming tech heavy. That's like, oh, here's a thing we're doing for this audience who's younger, who's interested in it. No, I totally agree. I think what's really fun with Bravo, a couple of years ago, I was talking to people at Peacock. I was invited to give a talk and I said, I think you don't necessarily need a general streamer. Clearly, they did not listen. And that's fine. Good for them. They're doing very well. But I was like, you could launch a Bravo streaming service.
Yeah.
And the margin on that would be high because that audience is so loyal. They will pay for the extra content if it's packaged well. Like they will show up and watch in a way that is harder to necessarily do with like a Dick Wolf show.
Right.
Like, oh, they might come, but they're also happy with NBC. And I think that remains true today, where when you look at the Bravo audience, to your point about like they'll watch the recap, especially if they want to try something new. They are interested in experimenting with the new show. One of their favorite influencers, I think about Boz now being on Beverly Hills. And I was like, I followed Boz through like when she was at Pepsi. Like I remember this. And so I was more interested in Beverly Hills again because she's on it. And so the ability to kind of go in and then have really interesting exclusive content for Bravo, like that is something that they can grow exponentially.
I agree.
And I do wonder, to your point, about like when does it become too much? When does it become too gimmicky? And then when does it feel really good? Is something that they will be able to experiment with for some time until they realize what that line is. And they'll hit it. They'll hit the ceiling.
I think
they'll
know. Too. And I think the other thing that I think about, which is like very much an untapped thing for them, is like The Traitors drops their new episodes 9 p.m. on Thursday. And it's actually appointment television. Like a lot of like really loyal viewers of that show, they sign on to Peacock at 9 p.m. on Thursday night. 100%. They don't want to be spoiled, the whole thing. And so something that I'm curious about when or how they'll do this, and I feel like it has to happen at some point, is like, I know they probably can't put the new episode of Real Housewives of Atlanta on at 8 p.m. on Sunday when it airs on Bravo because of probably like cable deals and what have you. You know much more about that than I do, but like, why can't they put it on at 9 p.m. the hour right after it finishes airing on Bravo? Like, people have to wait till the next day to watch it. And it takes away from the collective live viewing experience of some of these episodes, I think,
totally.
For people who don't have access to that live cable viewing. Like, I literally use my parents' cable password to watch Bravo live on Xfinity. Like, that's how I watch it live. And like, I don't know. I think that is sort of one of the next frontiers for them, perhaps.
That'll happen. It's the very quick version, because it's like a boring financing. Like, the very quick version is, for a long time, you couldn't simulcast your cable programming on your streaming platform because the advertisers and the affiliates would get very mad. They'd be like, well, why would people, remember, cable's declining very fast. Mm-hmm. They're like, we can't keep losing people. We pay you X amount of dollars a month to carry your programming. Now, though, because what's happened is the cable providers, like the Comcast and the Charters of the world, have basically started making deals to basically say, we're going to carry Peacock, and so therefore Bravo's on it, and we're going to offer our subscribers Peacock. You're starting to see like CNN, HBO, they now just simulcast. So at 9 p.m. on HBO, you also can get it on Max. So this will come
we need
to
that
Peacock.
On Peacock. Yeah, we need that on Peacock.
It'll happen. I don't know when, because I'm sure the affiliate revenue is decent and they don't want to just go into the ground yet. But they literally call like this new company that they have, which is NBC Sports, NBC Bravo, Peacock, as their growth co. So like they're hyper invested in making sure that grows. So hopefully we'll get it soon, because I'm with you.
And then last idea that I wanted to run by you is like, so I always have had this idea of like the smartest people you know watch Bravo. I literally have merch for my podcast that says that, because I believe that. And like, there's something that hits when like somebody who you like really admire in the public sphere in some capacity says they watch Bravo, or like when a celebrity who maybe they're not the smartest people, but like they watch Bravo and like they have a lot of power, but they still care about this stuff. And I'm curious what your theory is as to why people in those sort of cohorts care so much about Bravo. And it seems like a lot of people do. Like there's a common denominator there.
I feel like it's the obvious answer, but I genuinely feel like the more stressful, more senior, and more responsibility you have at your job or just through your life, the more you want something where you turn your brain off.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, this is the joke about Bravo, and I think it's obviously an over-exaggerated simplification, but it is like women yelling at each other.
Yeah,
and you're like, this is great. Yeah, like I love this. I do not have to think. I can envision myself in that scenario. It brings me entertainment. My friends are interested. I think the community part of this, by the way, is
definitely
so important.
Oh,
is
100%.
Like I can text my friends about what's going on. Like at Puck, the most active channel on Slack at Puck is a Bravo channel. And I think like it's that. It's just there's something so comforting. And to your point, a lot of us have been with it for 12, 13 years. And so you're like, this is just, I'm so invested in a way that I still am with like Grey's Anatomy, even though that's been done for years, but they're still doing it. Like I'm like, well, I'm invested. It relaxes me. And I just think like, oh, this is entertaining. And I think a lot of the problem with TV today is it's not entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're puzzling and you have to solve it. You have to pay a lot of attention. It's bleak. A lot of it is like, oh, God, that's bleak.
And
like
literally our current, dark. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And our current reality is bleak. And so the more that you have something that's like, they're arguing over like who's going to the house.
Right.
Like, and who's going and who's sitting next to me on vacation.
Yeah.
What room I get. Like, sure. Like, give it to me. And it's also funny. Like, it is.
Yeah,
they're funny shows. Mm-hmm. Like, the characters are funny and they do the most outrageous things. And I think it's maybe a really dumb, obvious answer. It's just good TV.
Yeah.
Like, it's just good TV. And I think when you are spending your day thinking about complex problems, thinking about how to do things that have no easy answers, watching something that's entertaining and funny where the answer is simple, like, okay, well, then don't take that bedroom. Like, go to another bedroom.
Okay.
Is so lovely.
Yeah.
That you're like, I can just sit in the warm bath of whatever drama I am not involved in. Because we love nothing more as people than to have drama and not be involved in it.
Right. To be able to talk about it. Right. And not have it affect us.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. That's a great note to end on, Julia. This is amazing. This is exactly what I wanted this to be. I really appreciate you coming on. Where people subscribe to your newsletter, read your writing, plug all the things before we sign off here.
First of all, thank you for having me. I love this. I'm so honored. I'm at puck.news and for some reason still on Twitter at loudmouthjulia.
Same. We'll never quit it. We'll never quit it. Well, Julia, thank you so much. And hopefully we get to do this again soon.
I would love to.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support and see you next time.